because once they start getting on a roll and Harry Grant starts to scheme and probe, well, we're as good as done. So let's hope that the referee puts the whistle away and we can actually play some Origin footy and actually slow it right down. And because I think if we can slog it out with the big men we've got and the speed we've got out wide, that's our best chance. Today we're going to preview everything Origin, why New South Wales can win, but funnily enough, that is also one of the reasons why they might not. We got Will Bedell back, who's got some fascinating stats around Origin as well. What else we got, Steve?
Mate, we also talk about Queensland being favourite in game three and the absolute brain fart of all brain farts, the Cody Walker incident, mate.
Absolutely. And importantly, wins for both of our sides. That could be the first time. Actually, I think that is the first time we've been able to say that this year as well. So we'll excitedly talk about those games.
Can't wait, Paul. Can't wait.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that Origin has been known for is you get your best players in there and then you find a way to make it work. Now, one of the things that's been clear, particularly in the first two games, is that we haven't had that gelling of Cleary, Moses and Tedesco at this point. If they can find a way to make it work and Blake Brayley gets more time on the field, then the upside there is there's massive potential for them to dominate, depending on how our forwards go, of course. But as we've talked about, if they don't gel, then we're back to where we were before, which is we're no hope.
Yeah, spot on, Hawk. I look at this spine and I think to myself that that's got the ability to win it, but also the ability to lose it for us. Now, if you look at those three players on their club teams, they're the ones in control of football. You know, this year we've seen Tedesco sort of take a backward step now that Walker's starting to mature and DCE's in the game. But those three players, Moses, Cleary, Teddy, run the show at their own clubs. And then we talk about Brayley coming off the bench. He does that at Cronulla at a dummy half when we've seen so dominant for their club side try and combine. Put simply, it hasn't worked up until now. So we're hoping, above all hope as a Blues fan, that they can get it done on Wednesday. But I just see the problem of them gelling. Then you compare that to the Maroon spine. I don't know whether there's a Blues spine player that Slater would take over one of they've got. You know, Ponga and Grant have been huge. Munster, and even Walker. Walker at the moment's the favourite for the Wally Lewis medal. So right now I think that the spine really need to come together for New South Wales. They need to find a way to gel. They need to find a way that they're all going to get a hold of the ball. But who is going to be the dominant standout performer? But just really crossing over with each other, and it's just not gelling nicely.
Absolutely. The interesting thing for these players, when they've been at their best, it's almost like they've been the focal point. And so if you look at when Moses has played, he's often played with a running 5-8, something we've talked about. He had Luai there in 2024 when we go up to Queensland and we win it. But also when he had that dominant game, it was a first half, and I think it was game two that year when we blew them out of the water. He had Luai there as well. If you think back to, we were talking about this yesterday when, because we were at the Paramanly game talking about how we wished Tommy was playing in Origin and that he probably should have been. Back to around that 2020 mark when we had Luttrell and Turbo in the centres, you got Nathan was on fire. We went up to Queensland and we win two games in Queensland to win the series 2-0 before we even get to game three. Outside him, he had Luke Keary, who from memory in those games did a fair bit of running the football. I actually saw some highlights about that when they were talking about Keary and his representation, given he thought he was a Queenslander. And he had Cody Walker outside him, another guy who's fantastic at running the football. And Nathan really dominated that series, despite the fact that people say he hasn't. Yeah. With two big bodies back in the centres that have done the job at Origin before, that's the upside. But it really comes down to all of those three players. Like, they've done it when they've been the dominant player, but maybe some of them having to put their ego aside and just play a role when one of them just runs the show.
Yeah, spot on, mate. You mentioned Little Eye Castile, saying that he's mentioned around being Batman and Robin.
Mm.
Unfortunately, these three guys are all Batman in their club side and haven't found a way to be able to understand that you can't have three Batmans on the field and four if Brayley, you know, when Brayley comes on. They certainly won't make the mistake of playing Robson for 80 minutes again.
Mm.
So they've got to find a way to gel. They've got to make sure that everyone's getting the ball. To your point, I genuinely think that our huge hope is to get our centres early ball. I think that has been something that we haven't done a good job of in the first two Origins. So getting them early ball is going to be vital. But yeah, someone of those, you know, two, at least one, is going to need to take that, you know, support role, that backup role, or if three of them are clashing for the football, as we saw with Will Stats a couple of weeks ago. It's just not going to work out, and Queensland are going to roll through us again like they have done the first two.
Yeah. Interestingly, talking about Batman, yesterday Pezzett for the Eels was the best game he's played for Para because he was running the show and he's a lot more controlled and calm, and it wasn't like he was trying to have to assert himself on the game. He just played, so he might have suffered a bit from being that second stringer, which makes it even more interesting. He goes up to the Broncos when they've still got Ben Hunt. We've got Matt Duffy coming along, how that's all going to work as well. So, yes, the more we talk about it, the more I don't like our chances. But if they can find a way to make it gel and Teddy can be used more as a meter eater and just getting up the middle and less about trying to ball play, then we got to be some kind of hope. Now, as we talk about Origin, we've got Will on again, and he's got some really interesting stats about Origin, particularly Queensland and how they go about Game 3. So let's look at that now. Great to have you back, Will. How you been?
Thanks, Hawk. Yeah, good, mate. Good. It's been cold up here in the mountains. So, looking forward to lighting the fire this afternoon.
Yeah, sounds very nice. Now, you've got some interesting stuff around the Broncos. They have been the story of the year, really, aren't they? The title defence has come crashing down. What can you tell us?
Yeah, the fall from grace, unfortunately. You know, there's been some natural, you know, and obvious external factors in regards to their injuries. They've used the most players in this year with 32 being used. And probably more importantly to that is the fact that they, in previous years, they only used 27 in those years. So that, you know, it's obviously, it's eaten into their depth. And one of the key guys, I was actually having a look at the combinations of these, of the big three or the big four players who have played together in the same game. And the guys I looked at were the obvious three, Reece Walsh, Ezra Mam, and Adam Reynolds. But I also threw in Billy Walters there, who, as you guys know, he hasn't played a game this year because of his ACL. He just made his return on the weekend. You know, the interesting thing is last year they played them seven games together. They won five with a 71% win rate. They'd really like those seven wins and this year to get him into the eight. So, you know, like he's been a, I thought it was a good mention as to how important he's almost been the forgotten man in their team. But he's been a big loss, and I think that those numbers would support that.
Yeah, really interesting. Like, we saw how well he went, and it was probably his best year in the NRL, but it is so interesting to see just what a big impact he has had not being there. Thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I'm huge on Billy Walters. We've spoken to him about him off and on throughout the season. I think he was, well, they got over the line the back end of last year and obviously won the grand final. There are a number of those games that could have gone either way. And I think Billy Walters missing this season has been huge. To Will's point, he's played the last 2 weeks in the Q Cup for the South Logan Magpies up here. He scored a try in both. He's been playing halfback. I wouldn't read too much into that. They've got a really good young hooker, Callum Eggerling, up here at South Logan. So Walters has played seven, but has been really impressive by all accounts in the first 2 weeks. So I wouldn't be surprised if he finds himself back into the NRL very shortly and desperately needed, to Will's points around those stats. That's pretty telling.
Yeah, it is. What else can you tell us about the Bronx, Will?
Yeah, a couple of other things. And again, like when you look at a season like this, you tend to look at everything, but I've you know, sort of narrowed it down to, I think, what Madge will be looking at specifically. If we look at their, just simply put, the amount of points they've conceded in the first part of the year compared to the second part of the year has just been a huge difference. So from rounds 1 to 8, they were averaging only just a tick over 21 points conceded. Now, in the modern day with, you know, more ball in play, that's pretty good. Penrith are the only outlier with 13 points conceded per game. You know, most of the other teams, well, the best teams are around the 18 or around the 18 or the 20 mark. Conversely, from rounds 9 to 18, almost 34 points per game. Yeah, it's been a huge jump. And the two games in particular, which, you know, has probably broken their heart at the end of the day, the game against the Dragons and also the Titans. Like those two games, I'm sure that they were expecting to win those games. Obviously, they lost both of those games. They lost the Titans game in the last, you know, minute or so with a great play from Kinney. But, yeah, it ultimately, they say that I'm defense wins comps. Well, you know, you're not going to win a comp conceding 34 points a game.
Yeah, and do you think that's an attitude thing from what you've seen, or is it the number of people they've got out injured? Is it a system thing? Because we know Ben Teo had a fair bit to do with their defence, and he's moved on.
Again, I think it's a little bit of everything, but I like to put it down as well to, I think there's a bit of arrogance in the team, you know, and I think that was highlighted by Payne Haas, who came out and said, you know, they've got to, you know, stop the RBS, you know, because they're talking about it, but they're not actioning it. And if you look at the amount of comebacks, I mean, if you look at a comeback in nature, you can almost assume that, okay, like you're just taking it easy at the start of the game because you know you've got it in the bank. There's a little bit of arrogance, I think, there that's, you know, sort of like an underlying tone there where you know, if you just think it's going to happen, it happened last year, but lightning hasn't struck twice.
And there's a few players from that squad who played some of their best ever football last year whose form's really fallen off a cliff, so that actually makes sense. Something we've spoken about a fair bit this year is the impact of playing the Panthers and how the teams perform the following weeks, and you've got a bit of data around the Warriors since they've played the Panthers.
Yeah, it's been an interesting last 4 to 6 weeks for the Warriors. If we're looking at the results since they lost, including their result, they've gone loss and then a bye, loss, win, loss, and another bye. You throw in Origin, a couple of injuries in there, and the word that comes to mind is disjointed, maybe a lack of rhythm as well. And the since that Penrith game, they're 1 win out of 4 games. And I was looking at some stats with the, if you want to call it the Penrith hangover, the team that, you know, plays after they play on the Panthers, the win rate is only 28% after you play the Panthers.
Yeah, that's telling.
Which is not unexpected. I think everyone's aware of that, but it certainly just gives it a whole number. But the point about the Warriors is that they've just hit just a little bit of a slump. But in saying that, and I say a slump in regards to their standards, but I would also say that if you're going to have a little bit of a slump, now's the time to have it. We're coming out of Origin next week. We're going to have another like 6 or 7 games under our belt. That's more than enough time to get back into the groove.
Yeah, I know a lot of teams go into like almost a second preseason towards the back end of the year. They may be a bit of that happening as well. You got any thoughts on that too, Steve?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I mean, there's two ways to look at that. Obviously, Penrith are just such a hard team to come up against. They just dominate both sides of the football, and we've seen that throughout the year. So, you know, Penrith turned up from round one this year and have really dominated. So, you know, those stats from Will are not shocking, but when you hear them, you think, yep, that's how good Penrith really are. The flip side of the Warriors, they've got a fairly easy run the next month of the football. So they've got the Tigers, the Dragons, the Bulldogs and the Titans before they play Penrith again. So these next 4 weeks will be really interesting to see how they go. To your point around the injury, I think their middles, they've really missed, you know, Fisher, Harris, Ford and Barnett through injury or origin. You know, have missed those last few weeks as well. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what they do in the next month of football leading into that Penrith game at home. It'll be a packed house there, and I think that'll be an absolute cracking game of football. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting watch, and I can't see those stats changing against the Penrith one. I think opposition teams are just going to continue to struggle the week after they play Penrith, which will be really interesting coming into the year. Because second, you'd think whoever comes fourth is going to have to play them in the semi-finals. So it'll be really interesting to see how they back up the assumption that they lose against Penrith the first week of the semis, how they back up and play that second week. So, yeah, very, very interesting, Will.
It would be interesting to see what the stats are like on having played the Warriors as well. Now, post that game that you refer to, Panthers blew a massively understrength and under like poor attitude Tigers 68-0, but then they've lost two since then as well. So I wonder if there is some sort of impact there. That'd be interesting to see. Perhaps it's not as glaring, but I imagine playing against that pack and that speed would not be would have an ongoing impact as well. So maybe one.
And Hawk, that's a good point actually that you mentioned that because the. The Panthers did a similar thing earlier in the year where they smashed Melbourne by 50 and then lost to the Dogs the next week as well. So there's a, I guess you can call it a little bit of a hangover for them as well, but after a massive win, you know, like maybe they've just been a little bit off the ball as well. So that's, you know, not a bad point too.
Yeah. What have you got for Origin, mate? We for Blues fans, we want hope. What hope can you give us, mate?
Okay, so the hope is that the game hasn't started yet, right? Everyone's a chance. Going into every game, you are a chance. But the mentality, I'd like to talk about the mentality since Billy Slater took over the Origin team in 2022. So I was just having a look again, like just keeping it really simple, having a look at how Slater's mentality for this Origin or this Queensland team, they are going into game threes. So their average completion in game threes since he took over is 85%. So you couple that with their average kick meters per game is 26% higher in game threes than it is in every other game. The reason I believe that this is so significant is because they have got better every game, and that's what the stats also say, like going back to even 2018. But Queensland, based on those numbers, they won't beat themselves. New South Wales have got to leave it all out there. They got to go for it. Like they go for they just got to go for the throat. If you actually look, I went back and I had a look at the other side of our 24, where the halves were Moses and again Luai in that game where Bradman Best scored in the corner. Great Origin game. It was 2-2 for most of the game, and then 4-2 as well. But New South Wales backed themselves. Ironically, they kicked high a lot to Zach Lomax on the wing. We've got another kick target now in Jack Bostock, so I'd expect to see that as well. I'd also expect to see a lot more early ball to Bradman Best and Stephen Crichton. And they've come back into the team. But Queensland won't beat themselves. That's the bottom line. New South Wales have got to go for it, leave nothing out there, go for it from the moment that game starts. You've got to go for it.
Yeah, so from the sound of that, it's almost like something that's been talked about in the last week or so is that they end up with their best team by the last game, which is probably true, but also getting that right rhythm, that right cohesion. But it also probably talks to the fact that if they've completing high, then there's probably, whether they simplify the game plan or it's more like we're going to make sure we're still in this game in the last 20 minutes because we know we're a big chance. It'd be obviously, we're not going to find out the conversations, but it'd be so interesting to hear if they do change that game plan with a little bit of different intent, knowing that they always come home strong. You got any thoughts on that one, Steve?
I think you've hit the nail on the head, mate. I think that all points to, you know, Queensland playing that really controlled, dominant, effort-based game that they're renowned for. By the time they get to game three, they know they take it deep. To Will's stat, the big one there was the kick for me. Like 85 is a huge stat, but that kick stat's massive. So really kick well, you know, back their defence. You know, they almost pulled it off against 13 on 12 in Origin 1. After the send-off, playing that simple football, really effort-based. So, once again, Will, you've killed it with the stats, mate. That's really interesting and paints a picture for what we can expect on Wednesday night.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Will. Mate, always super interesting, but you've actually brought some stuff to the table today, which I think will surprise many as well. So, thanks.
No worries, guys. Thanks. Have a good day.
You too, mate.
Yeah, that was bloody interesting from Will there, Hawk. You know, to see the way Queensland play in Game 3, the way they shift, yeah, they're more consistent with their games. They're more consistent with their team selections come Game 3. But just the way they play, it certainly points to, you know, that effort-based game, that long kicking game, high completion rate, and just wear the opposition down. You know, Queensland are happy to win the game in the 80th minute. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, you know, they talk about Queensland being the underdogs in years gone by, and that's obviously started to change over the last few years. But Game 3, the expectation is Queensland's going to win. It'll be an absolute full house at Suncorp Stadium. So that points to the way they're going to play for mine. You know, those stats around 85% completion rate, long, long kicking game, they'll kick early. They'll chase hard and let their defence do the work in that effort-based football. So it's very interesting to see how they're going to handle it on Wednesday night.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be also interesting to see how it's refereed, because for mine, from what we've seen, particularly in the second half of Game 2, is that we need to slow the ruck and we need to be pushing the absolute boundaries of play the ball speed and just trying to slow down that Queensland momentum, because once they start getting on a roll and Harry Grant starts to scheme and probe, well, we're as good as done. So let's hope that the referee puts the whistle away and we can actually play some Origin footy and actually slow it right down. And because I think if we can slog it out with the big men we've got and the speed we've got out wide, that's our best chance.
Yeah, mate, I'm expecting a really skinny 10 metres. I think both sides will be a step and a half offside the entire game, at least until the referee starts blowing the whistle. So I'm expecting a really skinny 10. And then to your point, both teams will try and control the ruck as much as possible. It has been an absolute blight on the New South Wales forwards, the way that they've left Harry Grant dominate through the middle. The mark of defence hasn't been good enough. And neither is the AMB defender. So it's certainly something New South Wales will try and control with the ruck speed to slow Harry Grant's options down. And then from there, it'll be up to the referee to see how far he's going to let them push it before he starts blowing the whistle. But look, there's no doubt we're in for an absolute cracking game of football. But to Will's stats, that's how Queensland's going to do their best to try and have that favourite tag on them. A little bit more conservative early, complete our sets, kick well, effort-based, and we'll beat you in the 80th minute if we have to.
If you're a betting man, you're going to back Queensland to get the job done in the last 20 minutes, because they, more often than not, they're the team that does. We have had the odd moment over the last few years where we've actually been able to close out games, but history has got a pretty strong reminder for all us Blues fans that if we're going to win this, we need to be getting ahead as early as possible and getting a bit of a lead out, because if we're trying to hang on, it's not gonna happen.
No, definitely, mate. And to that point, I still think he has to change the starting forward pack. I think we need to get out to an absolute flyer. He needs to find a way to make up for Tuo's 200, 250 metres out of the backfield. Now, certainly, Bo Stock will take his share runs, but he's not going to do what Tuo's done. So I still think they're going to need to be a little bit quicker in the legs early. And don't be surprised if Radley finds his way onto the bench. If they can work out the fact that they've got to come up with these metres, you can't see the big three. You know, the Fenua Blakes, the Hasses, the Barnetts, getting themselves behind the ball in those first three tackles early in the game. So we're going to need those quicker players early in that first 20 to try and get the ball down at least over halfway for Moses and Cleary to do the kicking game. So I'm expecting some changes on the bench on the back of that, but that's certainly New South Wales's option. We've got to get out to a flight, try and get caught up, and hopefully they can get a couple of tries early.
Yeah, and so for my money, that's why Cam Murray's got to start. He is the sort of forward who can get back and he can be there early in the set. But I think also it's why we're going to really depend on Best and Crichton to churn out big metres coming out of their own end to make sure that we're supporting Bostock to make sure it's not left all up to him. There's going to be some meters to be eaten up by someone else without Tio there. So yeah, it really will be a test of that back five, and yeah, it's mate, tough gig, but fingers crossed. Cody Walker, for all his brilliance, man, he's got some brain snaps when he just gets a bit too fired up, mate.
Yeah, for me, this was atrocious on two halves. You've got a grown man who's just done that on the football field. Not only you talk about, you know, letting his team down massively, the supporters, etc., but, mate, for mine, you can't pick and choose when you want to be a role model. Cody Walker's does a lot in the community, and then he goes and does something like that. It's just atrocious. And then from the NRL's perspective, I think they've missed it greatly. For him not to get sent off and then for only to get 1 week suspension, for me, is not good enough. There's kids all over the East Coast watching Cody Walker. He's their hero. And he's seen them do that and only get a 1 week suspension, 10 in the bin. I just don't think it's acceptable at any stretch. I think he should have got sent off immediately, and I think it should have been quite a lengthy suspension. So the NRL have made it clear to everyone, all the way down to the under sixes, that you just do not kick on the rugby league field. Because I don't care what anyone tells me, that was a kick and you shouldn't have done it. And it was absolutely unacceptable. This wasn't a young fella who's only just started playing the game. This is a 36-year-old grown man who leads his club into an NRL game, and that was simply not good enough. So just off. Formal round for mine, mate.
Yeah, crazy. And he's always flown pretty close to the wind and had that edge about him and reacted. But, yeah, that's a step too far. It didn't do any damage. But, like you said, horrible, horrible look. We'll come back to that particular game. Let's get into the reviews. One thing from the weekend that I thought was very cool was how many of the players did the bow and arrow try celebration as a tribute to Dry Arrow. Yeah. Again, it's just a great example of how our game comes together and supports people. Pretty impressive. Panthers Rabbitohs. Now, I didn't think, as much as they blew power off the park the week before, I didn't think they were that great considering just how much ball we turned over. They were clunky, and they were clunky again on Friday night. I saw an interesting stat from Clarkie's rugby league page today, and he was talking about how that the teams that have beaten Penrith have taken them out of their system and they've thrown something different at them. He quoted the Bulldogs and the Cowboys game. The Rabbitohs looked like they were trying to get in the grind with them and out Panthers, the Panthers, but that's just not going to happen.
No, spot on, mate. The completion rate wasn't good enough. Obviously, the Cody Walker 10 in the bin certainly didn't help. South at the time as far as the scoreboard goes, but they just didn't look like they were connected, mate. The 77% completion rate's not where it needs to be if you're going to beat Penrith. It's not where it needs to be if you're going to beat anyone, truth be told. I thought Penrith just did enough in that first half, especially just, it was 12-10. They just got through the work and where they needed to. And then, like Penrith quite often do, the second half they hit the afterburners and just took off. I thought Jenkins, once again, the point of the three tries, but just the way he's carrying the ball at the moment, his defence, he's playing really, really tough footy. So I think that was really impressive. So for mine, Penrith train just keeps rolling on, even without their origin players. And South, to me, just look like they're going to be one of those teams that, you know, at best they're going to hover in and snag an eighth spot. But it doesn't look like, especially without the absolute full-strength team on the park, that they can match it with some of these top teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Milky Jenkins, what a player. Interestingly, he had that time in Newcastle where he battled, and he's come back to the Panthers and just absolutely excelled. That stat around number of try doubles, which it looks like he's going to knock off this year, he's up to 11. That's phenomenal, because that's a record that's sat there for a good 7 years. But let's just talk about, was it the second try where they looked at and saw whether he got the ball down or not? Now, it looked like he probably did with a finger on it, but I was confused, because in it, I'm like, straight away, I'm like, well, the arm carrying the balls touched the ground. Doesn't that make it a double movement straight away?
Yeah, for me, that shouldn't have been a try. For me, that was a penalty double movement. There was no way that should have been a try for mine, mate. Another howler from the bucker that just simply wasn't good enough. It certainly didn't change the result, but they, South didn't need that try to happen when it did, mate.
Nah. They didn't even mention the commentary. I was on Fox. I didn't even hear them talking about the double movement. They were just talking about the put down. So that's crazy in itself that, like, just everyone missed that, because, The amount that they nitpick around different things and then they sort of call things back, and then for them just to miss that altogether, it makes no sense.
Yeah, no, agree, mate. Agree. Big performance by the rookie Dane Jennings. So it was only his second game. He played against Para the week before. He got over for a try, but just really hard carries. Just played tough footy. Played like he can handle the men's. He's only a young fella, but played strong and really looked like he's got a future in the NRL ahead of him, mate.
Absolutely. Now let's get to one of the big results of the weekend. We talked about it in the preview show last week that we thought the Dragons were a massive chance. We also talked about the Tigers playing for their season. And while it wasn't fantastic from the Tigers, they did hang in there, but they left it late, the Drags. At some point, did you think this is going to be one that we just won't quite get over the line? Because they only really led until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I think they scored three tries in the last 12 minutes of the game. So I was, I was kicking stones there for a long time in the game. Look, Adam Dewey was sensational. You know, we've spoken a lot about Dewey over this season. I thought his performance kept, the West Tigers in it for a hell of a long time. He was really strong. But in the end, the Dragons found a way, which is not something that they've done well. Of late, when you're losing becomes a habit, unfortunately, for the Dragons, but they found a way. Those three tries in the last 12 minutes, two to Valentine, who, we've put a fair bit of negative feedback on, and rightfully so in my mind, but he finished the game really impressively. Look, it wasn't tremendous as far as completion rates and a few other things goes, but it was a performance that the Dragons needed, and West Tigers certainly didn't. We spoke during the week about what West season could look like if they dropped this game to the Dragons. And I think this is it. I called it before the game that we'd need to put the red line through them if they lost to St. George. That's occurred. I just cannot see them making the eight now, even fully fit. Obviously, Kai Piss-Paul's gone for the season. Appy's got scans on a very, very similar injury. Looks like he's torn his pec. Don't know how bad, but if he's out again for the year, Taylor May is gone for the season. He's had a shoulder reconstruction. So I can't see them making the eight from here, which is really disappointing for their fans after the way they started the season. And for the Dragons, they just get that little bit better. Those young forwards have just got that little bit more experience, and another game rolls on for them.
Yeah, absolutely, and it was great to see them looking so happy, and the fans at Cogra there looking pretty chuffed as well. Yeah, the poor old Tigers, if you look ahead at their draw, it's suddenly looking really challenging. They have got the Warriors, the Dogs, who have hit a little bit of form. Then they have to go down to Canberra. Now, that's always a tough trip, but particularly when you're not in form. Then they've got the Eels, Dragons double. Now, if both of those teams turn up how they turned up on the weekend, both teams are defending better. If they can find points and the Tigers still are playing as inconsistently, then they're going to be tough games. Then they've got the Roosters away, the Cowboys away, and the Panthers to finish off. That's a tough run home.
Yeah, it certainly is, mate. That's why we called it on our last episode, mate. I just can't see. They desperately needed to beat St. George on the weekend. I think Benji even made reference to that in his pre-game interview. So they're fully aware of how tough the road is. They've definitely got to beat St. George next time around, and they've got to take Parramatta on and knock them over, and then hope that they start to get a couple of these bigger scalps. But without KPP and Appy, Taylor May, with all due respects, they're three of their better players. So I think this season now for the Tigers is done. It'll just be where they can finish and how they can regroup and make sure that they finish the year on a high, get ready for next season.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard Kenty and Paul Crawley talking about it before this weekend, saying the Jerome Luai experiment, if he doesn't take him to the finals, then it's an absolute failure. Well, they're not going to make it this year. That puts a lot of pressure on him next year to get the job done. They're going to need a bit of luck next year, because what we're seeing is that some of these players are still a bit away from having that consistent football. But he went there. He talked it up a fair bit. So far, hasn't delivered. And he might have had a few things run against him this year. But, he's going to need to continue to take him in an upward trajectory next year. Otherwise, he's going to go to the Chiefs with that almost, I don't know if it's a blight, but definitely a cross against his name for what he was able to do at the Tigers. And maybe it'd be a bit unfair, and maybe some of that will show in the cultural changes he's been able to help Benji put in place, which will give him success in the future. But just for straight out results, he's not going to see it there.
Yeah, spot on, mate.
So if we go to the next game, we've got the Bronx and the Sharks. Now, I saw another interesting piece. I think it was from Clark again. He was talking about how much people were talking up the Sharks halves. Now, we haven't been alone in giving the Sharks halves a fair bit of stick. He said, before anyone gets carried away, we should look at the 16 games in total for the starting props for the Broncos and two debutant forwards on the bench, that there was hardly playing against a elite pack against the Sharks team that probably should have dominated far more than they did. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I think that's probably a little bit harsh on the Sharks, but yeah, I agree, mate. At the end of the day, the Broncos are missing a number of players, and they have done for some time. Obviously, Origin is a big miss for them, but two key forwards with Haas and Carrigan, really puts a dent in them. You know, then we talk about Billy Walters with Will's segment. They're three of their key defenders in the middle. So it is very, very challenging if you're going to take three key middles out of any team, Penrith Warriors included. So I can certainly see his point. But look, at the end of the day, the Sharks didn't have to win. I still think the Sharks are off the mark a little bit. I don't think they're going to be able to mix it with the Warriors and the Panthers. But they're winning the games that they need to at this time of year. So they can put themselves up. I think they're going to be a little bit short to make the four. I think they're going to be pushing uphill there. But, if they can, get into that sort of fifth, sixth spot and get a home semi in week one, you never know what happens when a team's going to come off a trip to Penrith or a trip to New Zealand, and then the Sharks get them second week of the semis. You never know what might happen for the boys from Cronulla.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've just talked about a couple of other teams that might be battling around the bottom of the eight. So they may run into a team that's kind of limping in anyway. And that you would think that they still would get through to the second week of the semis. But I can't see them, I'm with you, can't see them doing too much more than that. Yesterday's first game, Eels Sea Eagles. What a cracking day it is, getting out there early. The sun did come out for a while.
I didn't see this coming.
You know what we always laugh about? You know when it's a team that doesn't travel in terms of their fan base, that the crowd will look fairly empty, but they'll put up a crowd figure and you'll just be like, there's no way there's that many in there. And yesterday it looked half empty and they called it 18,000 and like, there's no way there was 18,000 there yesterday. I don't know what's going on with the crowd figures. And then when I got home on the TV and I saw that, you see the wide shot of the stadium and it's like, mate, there's no way. It's really interesting, the creative accounting that goes on.
They must have been counting legs instead of bodies, mate.
Exactly. I've talked about it a fair bit that when the Eels can complete high, their young team is having a good crack. They defended well again without having to defend too many multiple sets, but they did repel a pretty talented Manly side a number of times. Obviously, again, Manly weren't at their best, but again, they still threw plenty at us and they defended well. It's good to see some of those young forwards in particular having a real crack, but the bloke that excites me most, and he's not re-signed for next year, and no, it's not Dylan Walker, who was amazing again yesterday, that incredible flick pass, but Ronald Volkman. I was joking yesterday with the boys, keep him, move Moses on and use that extra coin to go hard at some other marquees. That he's been that good, and for a kid playing his 18th first grade game, he's doing a great job.
Yeah, mate, he has been. And even just sitting back watching the game, look, Manly weren't great. You know, their completion rate was 65%. They just continued to find a way to make errors. But Parramatta were there to capitalise on it. And that's the big thing that Parra probably hasn't done in the last sort of month or two of football. And yesterday they did that quite well. And Volkman was, you know, had his hand in everything they did. I thought Ioane was strong again from fullback. You can see he's just needs more time in the NRL, like Volkman, because they've just oozed talent and class. So it'll be interesting to see what Volkman does next year, whether it's Moses Volkman playing the halves with Pezza gone, obviously, or how they structure the side, because, you know, like the Dragons and the Tigers, Parra's looking towards next season now. So trying to get some game time into them. But certainly for mine, Volkman is NRL standard. And if Parra don't want him, someone else will certainly sign him. There's no question about that.
Yeah, apparently he has got a decent money offer on the table from English Super League. So fingers crossed we hang on to him. Pezzett's an interesting one. He was good yesterday, but I do hope that if Moses is back next week after Origin, that they keep Volkman in the side. And then it comes the question is, if they do hang on to Volkman, well, what's happened to this idea of, they've got the couple of young fellas coming through or playing cup and flag. Like, what was the point in trying to build towards those guys if now you've got someone else coming in? Or is it just thinking, okay, well, we've got to rethink things. Volkman's playing out of his skin. Let's make it work. Interesting times. They're definitely banking on youth, but which direction they go with youth, that will be the part that remains to be seen. I saw enough again from Tom Trbojevic to just make me wonder how he's not in a Blues jersey. Every time he touches the ball, he's such a physical presence. He is a huge man, and he just toyed with our defence at times. They couldn't wrap up the ball. He had offloads. Every time he got a couple of passes wide, he's so concerning to the defence that he creates space outside him at will. Let's hope that we can see him fully fit for the rest of the year, because it's not often that people say, everyone loves a certain player and people mean it. Because I don't know anyone who's got a bad word to say about him, even, supporters of the opposition.
All the, Yeah, all the Trevoia bitches are the same. There's no one has a bad word to say about any of them. The Manly's run home's pretty handy. There's a couple of tough games in there, but there's a couple of certainly winnable games in there. So I thought they hopped off the bus and expected to blow power off the park. They expected just to go through the motions, and I think that was the catalyst for all the errors. So obviously they're not going to get their full side back. Joey Walsh will play six for them for the rest of the season. But if they if they're fully fit and switch back on again, they're certainly a top eight side, Manly. And to your point, Trebojevic, if everyone's firing and everyone's switched on around him, he's going to cause some absolute carnage on the way home. So they've got some hard games, admittedly, but they've certainly got some winnable games. And anything at Brookvale, no matter who they're playing against, they're an absolute chance at. So with a bye still up their sleeve and certainly some winnable games, I'm picking them there to continue to hold on to their top eight spot. I think you just chalk that one up to a little bit of complacency there, mate.
Yeah, and they've been up for a long time as well. Joey Walsh, he is a baller. Like, he had some great moments. We're attacking the line. He pulls off an intercept, the try when he just ploughed straight into the padding on the post and gets it down. But he just had other moments too where you can just see he is going to be a quality first grader or better for a long time. He's a bigger frame than I thought, having seen him in the flesh the first time. Big upside.
I think absolutely. Having foreign there will help him certainly, mate. I think he's going to make some errors like he did on the weekend. That's part of the learning process, mate, having that goldfish mentality. He'll be good. They've got a really important game. I know we'll talk about it on Wednesday's episode, but they've got a very important game this week against the Cowboys. So a team that they'll be really competing against for that bottom half of the eight. So it'll be a very, very valuable 2 points to whoever wins the game at Brookvale Oval this coming weekend.
Yep. And if anything, it's the his halves part of that's going to have to step up, because Jamal Fogarty, that is a game that he should have been out of ice, and he's still been inconsistent, shall we say. So he's going to have to continue to get better as they head into finals, or it's just not going to happen. Now, one of those teams that we thought would be hovering around that bottom half of the eight is now entrenched in the top four, and despite the fact that both teams were missing a heap of their first graders due to origin and injury, pretty impressive performance from the Knights, because we've known them for blowing teams away, and they did a little bit of that early on in the game, but this was one that they just toughed it out and ground out a pretty impressive result.
Yeah, huge 2 points for the Knights. It really was. It was important for them, not only to solidify their spot in the eight, but to your point, push for the top four. They've actually had the second most wins behind Penrith with the 11. So all the other teams that have come in second because of byes have only had the 10 wins. So really interesting spot the Knights find themselves in, and not one that I thought we'd see. Look, as far as the Dolphins are concerned, it's nothing to go panicking about. They were missing a lot of players, as we mentioned in the preview show, due to Origin, and then Izzy Katoa's injury. So they certainly weren't as free-flowing with their backs, especially, and didn't make the yardage that they normally do. You know, Newcastle outran them for the game, both pre-contact and post-contact. So that's not something you see with the Dolphins pack very often. But you can see the players that they were missing. It's just one of those games that you chalk up a bit of origin damage, and you move on with next week. So I wouldn't be too fussed if I was the Dolphins fans. But as far as Knights fans, it's another game that they've won, and they just keep putting these 2 points on the board. So, you know, in time gone by without Ponga, they were no hope. And that's a very, very valuable 2 points. So for mine, they're an absolute lock for the top eight now. I think they only probably need one or two more wins. So they're going to be continuing to push for a top four spot now, which is huge for them. And pretty impressive from Adam O'Brien. For old Holbrook had been pushed around from a few other clubs now. The Titans especially. Probably unfairly for him to put the results up on the board that he has. As we say, with a few missing players, it's been quite impressive the way they've gone about their footy. And then they, developed the way they have. You know, develop Fletcher Sharp, Fletcher Hunt, two young fellas that have come from nowhere that are very, very impressive replacements and starting to become first-string footballers. He's got a decent football side in his hands.
Yeah, and more points for Dylan Brown. Everyone said, you know, well, is he capable of playing the number seven? He's kicked the all-important field goal. Maybe there was a little bit of, you know, he did have a chance to play in the seven when Moses was out, but maybe just having that presence there was intimidating. The fact that now he's been given the keys to the whole thing and running the show, yeah, maybe he's a better halfback than he was given credit because he got the job done there as well. Where do we go from here? So, oh, yes, we got to get to Gag's power rankings, mate. Where do we sit?
Mate, absolutely red hot changes. I'm still gobsmacked, truth be told. Gagan has dropped the Dolphins out of his power rankings. I think that is very, very harsh. I think missing who they had, I don't know if there's any Dolphins fans out there want to give Gagan some open and honest feedback on socials, but he's stuck with Penrith and Warriors 1 and 2. He's moved the Roosters into 3, Knights into 4, dropped the Sharks into 5, and that means that the Dolphins and Manly, on the back of losses, have fallen out of the top 5. So, look, I can sort of understand Manly just how, you know, with respect to Parra, they were certainly good enough to beat them, just how poorly Manly played. But for the Dolphins, I think that's very, very hard hard going from Gagan. But, yeah, the man's made his decision, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the next week or two.
Yeah, and let us know. Give him a spray if you feel like he's got that horribly wrong. For me, Manly have come off the boil a bit, so them sliding out the back door are not surprising. And as much as you say the Sharks, they're got a bit of a way. They are definitely on the improve, so I can see that one. But and we've just talked about the Knights, but the Dolphins dropping out altogether. That's criminal, unbelievable, and they're still.
Yes. Well, you might
go on.
He might have some egg on his face this week. Dolphins play the Sharks Saturday afternoon, so it'll be interesting to see how many backups for the Dolphins. But if the Dolphins put a score on the Sharks, you'll certainly be hearing about it Monday morning, mate. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, who does he follow? Just out of coincidence, he's not a Broncos fan that hates the Dolphins, is he?
No, he's certainly not, mate. He's a Parra junior. He did play some time at the Sharks. He did have a season or two at Cronulla. So maybe some old relatives.
Mate, you dropped out there at the end of that, so I'll have to make sure I edit that as well. Yeah, we talked before about maybe how the finals makeup may fall. The Knights dropping into 5th, the Sharks into 6th. Suddenly they're 2 tough away games. Mate, you want to make sure you're finishing above them. Given we're going to be the neutrals watching this, it's going to be a fantastic countdown to the finals, and you think this is going to be one of the best final series. They seem to say it every year, but the comp is, this is as close as I can remember seeing it. Like between 2nd and 9th, it's 2 wins.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I think this is the last, you know, mini bye round, as we call it, with 3 teams on the bye. Once we get through this bye week, we get Origin players back, the ladder will start to take shape. There won't be as, you know, close. So I think it's going to be an absolute cracking last sort of 6 to 8 weeks of the NRL. And then I think this final series could be one to remember. I certainly think whoever travels over the ditch to play the Wales in week 1 of the semi-finals is going to be up against it. We know what Penrith are doing. And then there's a few teams down below that can certainly blow any team off the park on the given day. So I think not only that first week, but that second week, I think, is going to throw up some really interesting matchups of the semi-final. So I would love to see a Blues victory here and then put Origin behind us and start a countdown to what should be an absolute cracking semi-final and final campaign.
Well said, mate. Enjoy your night out there. I hope you don't get too bashed by the by the crazy Queenslanders. And let's hope that you're able to walk out of there with a smile after a fantastic Blues victory.
Let's hope for it. Talk soon, mate.